But when you let the anger get way out of proportion, the anger is hurting you. It's not hurting him. Unless you sit that person down and say, "Hey, by the way, we need to have a conversation. When you said, my eyes are cross-eyed and I look ugly, that was hurtful."
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many, and perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Janice Litvin. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Janice. One, she is the author of Banish Burnout Toolkit. It's available at Amazon or her website, which is janicelitvin.com. And there you can download a free copy of the first chapter of the book. Two, Janice is a keynote speaker and workshop leader who helps leaders and their teams prevent burnout so they can come to work healthy and happy and be more productive. And three, she loves to dance and she leads free Zumba classes on Zoom. Janice Litvin, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you so much for having me, George. I'm delighted to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you today. And I think, and you don't mind if this time around we skip the Zumba lessons. That's not
Yeah.
for me.
I save that for my audiences.
Good, good, good. Banish burnout sounds like a powerful, timely cause. What's your definition of burnout?
Well, I use the World Health Organization's definition of burnout, which is chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. Actually, they call it a syndrome caused by chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. Now, a lot of people confuse the term stress with burnout. A lot of people say, "Oh, I'm so burnt out, I'm so burned out." True burnout is complete mental, physical, and emotional exhaustion to the point where you really have to take an extended leave. Really, when people say, "Oh, I'm so burned out," I think what they really mean is, "I'm very stressed out and I might be approaching burnout." And that's important to note as well.
And how can one make a determination or distinction? I'm feeling lousy right now. How do I know if I'm stressed or if I'm burned out?
It all starts with the brain. When someone says, "I'm feeling lousy," I mean, that's a very broad statement. That could mean physical, that can mean emotional, could be mental. And so it all starts with the thoughts. If you're waking up in the morning and the first thought on your mind is something you have on your to-do list, you might be a little stressed. And you might want to start thinking about spending a few moments throughout the day not focused on work, whether that means taking a 5-minute break outside in the sun, which releases a lot of happiness chemicals, or calling a friend and having a nice chat with a friend, just checking in, say, "How's your day going? I have all this work to do. I'm feeling nervous." And the friend can say, "Well," and that remind you of things you already know, take it one step at a time. We all let our emotions run our thoughts. Do the most important thing first. All the things we already know, sometimes our thoughts flood our brain with fear, and we just need to come back down to earth.
You mentioned fear, which is a frequent emotion, I think, for most of us, and fear is important to our survival.
Yes.
What other emotions do you believe contribute to burnout or stress, which leads to burnout?
The thing about the emotions that lead to burnout is when, well, first of all, when you have a stress reaction, it's normal human behavior to have an emotional reaction to something negative. The thing is, how upset do you get and how long do you stay there and complain and tear your hair out and fret? So that's the thing. It's okay to have a reaction, but how do you deal with it? And do you let it run your life and let fear and the other stress-based emotions, anxiety, frustration, worry, do you let those feelings flood your brain day in and day out? Or do you make your to-do list and check things off one thing at a time and then reward yourself every time you finish something? Because that's a nice moment to have some positive feelings.
When we react emotionally, which is normal, what can we do to keep the emotion from taking over, where we can say, well, I couldn't help myself. I was angry. He deserved it.
He might have deserved it. But when you let the anger get way out of proportion, the anger is hurting you. It's not hurting him. Unless you sit that person down and say, hey, by the way, we need to have a conversation. When you said, my eyes are cross-eyed and I look ugly, that was hurtful to me as a person. Or when you said the report I wrote was horribly written without anything specific, that was terribly inappropriate and hurtful. Why don't you give me some specifics, constructive critiques, and then I can change my report. So I don't know if I answered your question exactly.
And no, I'm not suffering burnout right now. No, I'm thinking. And have you ever experienced burnout?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. So in my early career, I worked for three different corporations spanning 10 years. And I realized in thinking back upon those early days that in those days, I had one boss that was fantastic, but most of the other people that I encountered in management didn't care about the employee, didn't care about what makes them tick or what their career goals were. I started out as a computer programmer at a large bank. And after a short time, I realized I didn't really like computer programming. I did it because my mother suggested that a technical career would support my quest to always be able to get a job. But I didn't really enjoy programming. What I enjoyed, the people, and I enjoyed interacting with the users and training them. And so I realized very quickly that that's the direction I wanted to go. But I was hired to be a programmer. They needed programmers, and that was it. You're going to be a programmer. And so that didn't help them, and it didn't help me. I ended up leaving. So to the degree that I got burned out on the job enough to quit, that was one example.
And so there's an example of the stress coming from you being in the wrong job, which led to a form of burnout, which really became was a life raft for you.
Are you saying the burnout was a life raft?
Yeah, because if you didn't hit that burnout, how long would you have stayed in that job that you hated?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And I was in my 20s. Looking back, I think I was afraid of change and how to make a big change, like leaving a job that I thought I would stay at for a long, long time. I was there for 4 years. And at that time, I'll tell you a little story that I don't always tell. At that time, I was still I told you earlier that I love to dance. You brought that up. And at that time, I was still taking dance classes every night after work. That was my dream, was to be a professional dancer. And so a number of dance friends of mine were moving to Los Angeles. I was living in San Francisco. And I thought, you know, you only have one life to live. You have to make your decisions based on what your goals and dreams and aspirations are. And sitting in a bank for 20 years, which I looked around me and saw a lot of people staying for many years, I thought, this is not where I see myself. So I quit my job and moved to Los Angeles to pursue a career as a professional dancer. And I have to tell you, my parents were not happy.
I can understand. I can understand my dad's reaction if I announced that. You know what? You know that university degree? Ah, the heck with it. I'm going to become a dancer.
You know what's funny about that, though? I made the same exact money while I was dancing. Now, you're not dancing full time. You have one job and another. But while I was dancing, I made the exact same money. So I found that very ironic for my father.
Janice, if we could talk to team leaders, how can they keep an eye out for burnout, and how can they recognize burnout from just simply stress, excitement, emotional, personal issues? What are the signals? What do they look for?
Well, George, I'm glad you brought that up, and there are actually a number of answers to that question. The first answer is know your people. And the way to know your people is to be with your people, spend a lot of time with your people. If, depending on the size of your team or your group, if you can have one-on-ones, either on Zoom, if people are working offsite, or take them for coffee or lunch, or little small groups, know enough about the person. And the way to get to know the person personally is to ask them personal questions, not invasive, but like, I know you have two children. Are they into sports? What are their favorite activities? What book are you reading? What's your favorite movie? What are you watching on Netflix? You know, what are you thinking about? What are your personal dreams and aspirations? What are your goals? What do you love about this job? And what, if anything, would you change if you could? How am I doing as a manager? What do you like about working with me? If there were something you could change, what would that be? To make me a better manager for you, to be more supportive for you. So that's number one. Number two, the second half of that is, if you see an employee who is not themselves, and if you know them, you know when they're not being themselves. Like if they're normally very upbeat in meetings, and suddenly they're kind of like quiet and sitting back, and maybe they're keeping their camera off on Zoom, don't ignore it. It won't go away. Don't sweep problems under the carpet. One of the main problems with mental health issues is nobody knows how to deal with them. They don't know what to say. They're afraid of insulting the person. But it's okay to take that person for coffee and say, you know, George, you just don't seem yourself lately. You're normally so upbeat, and I really love working with you. You're a great member of the team. Is something going on that I can help with? I want to help you. What's going on? Did I overload you when I gave you that new project last week and you so kindly said yes, but maybe I didn't ask you what else you were working on? Is there something going on with that? Or did Billy break his, you know, I knew Billy broke his leg a couple of weeks ago. Did he get an infection? Is something going on with Billy or Uncle George or whatever it is about the person that you know because you've spent the time getting to know them? Because when you sweep mental health under the carpet, it will erupt. And by the way, mental health is health. If someone comes to work with a broken leg, let's say they go to lunch and they decide to go for a jog at lunch and they come back with a broken ankle, you're going to drive them to the doctor. If somebody's not happy, and they usually are, they need attention and you have to help them.
The team members themselves, when they notice that one of their team members might not be themselves, what options do they have, either directly with that person or with the team leader, without intruding, crossing privacy issues? What can that team person do?
Well, again, if the manager has a really good, strong team cohesion, then the person can take the other person out for a walk and say, how's everything going? How are you doing? How are you doing with your work projects? Usually when you say, how are you doing, the floodgates, and if they say fine, well, everything's fine. Well, I noticed that you've been coming in at 11 and you usually come in at 9. Is everything okay? You know, would you like some support on something? Is something going on? And not to be too invasive, but, you know, I'm here for you. We're all on the same team. You know, we all want the same outcome. I'm here for you.
Now, there are times when what might sound like an innocent question, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Are you happy? Can feel invasive, can feel it's none of your damn business.
Well, I want to say this. When someone is struggling, a lot of people are afraid of being labeled mentally ill. So they're not going to go to their boss and say, I'm feeling mentally ill today. They're not going to go to their boss and say, I'm struggling, because they don't want to be labeled as that person can't do the job. Everybody wants to come across as being adept at their work and successful at their work. And yet it's important to, it really goes back to what I said earlier, which is people knowing each other and having a good team cohesion. That might mean a team offsite once a month where you go do a charity project, like a cleanup day, or go feed the hungry, or go read to some children, something, or go on a heart walk, or whatever it is, or let the team vote on a charity, and they want to do their own little fun charity drive for who walks the most number of minutes or the most number of steps or whatever you want to do, and everybody chip in, you know, so much money for however many steps they took, and donate that money to a cause that the team votes on, whether it's a heart association or a school or whatever, and begin to take these baby steps toward building a really strong unit team.
Now, so some of those other activities might sound like diversions. How do you conceptualize? We've been working hard lately, so let's go do a charity project. It sounds like a diversion. And it actually sounds like, well, you're just doing this charity project because you want us to work hard next month again.
Well, again, the best thing they can do is have a really good, strong relationship, one-on-one relationship between the manager and each member of the team. And, you know, when you do those diversions, it actually makes people more creative and more productive. And happier. When people are creative and creating something out of nothing, they're actually happier. It's not that you want them to work harder, it's that them you want to work more creatively and more innovatively. And the way to do that is to make sure they're happy. And to keep them happy, you have to have a good, strong relationship with them. Not to say that things aren't going to happen that interrupt that happiness. You know, nobody's happy forever. But true joy comes from within. It doesn't come from cars and a lot of money. Yes, we all need money, and people want a certain level of money. But after they've gotten to that level, whatever that dream level is, how much more money do they need? I think people are looking for self-fulfillment that they get from doing a job well done and coming up with innovative solutions to problems.
Janice, when you look at burnout, do you see it as a threshold that suddenly, before you weren't burned out, now you are? Or do you see it as a range?
I see it. I think I see where you're going with this question. I see it as a process. You don't wake up one day, oh, I'm so burned out. If you're paying attention to yourself, there are micro clues, like problem sleeping, problems eating, overeating or undereating. Getting obsessed with diversions like too much spending, for example, or just wanting to be alone all the time because you're just overloaded with so much that's coming at you. Or snapping. If you ever catch yourself snapping at people, whether it's at work or at home, you bring in your work problems home or bring in your home problems to work and you're snapping at people that don't deserve it, that's a clue. So when you start to have those little clues pop up repeatedly, that's an indicator that you better pay attention.
So I noticed that I snapped at somebody yesterday, and it happened last week. And right now, I feel like doing it again. What can I do to break the pattern?
Well, a number of things. So I'll give you a short vignette that addresses that. During the early days of the pandemic, my husband, my adult son, and I all already were working from home. And I thought, this would be a no-brainer. We all already work from home, no big deal. What I neglected to realize is that we weren't going to be able to have friends over for dinner. We weren't going to be able to go out to lunches and dinners anymore. And so, yes, we had a lot of Zoom interactions with family all over the country. So for that, it was kind of interesting and funny. People were having Zoom birthday parties and Zooms, Friday night dinners and things like that. But one day I snapped at my husband in the kitchen about something so mundane. And I thought, that's not like me. And what we were arguing about was something so mundane and stupid. And so I said, I went to my room and started journaling and writing down, why am I so upset? And I realized very quickly that I missed my friend. You know, social is a huge source of banishing burnout, staying social. And so I said, you know, this weekend, we're going to drive to our friend's house. And even if we have to stay in the car and they're talking to us from the front lawn, we're going to go visit our friends. And what they luckily, they were happy to see us. They put a big blanket on the yard and brought out some wine and cheese. And we sat 6 feet apart. We had such a good time. And I felt so much happier. And I don't want to underemphasize the importance of friendships. Really, really important.
And Janice, what I think I heard there is that the knee-jerk reaction to, you know, the team is experiencing burnout, therefore I should work them less harder. Or the other reaction, which sounds like, is we need to do something to build up their emotional strength.
Well, both of those are true. Did you realize, and I just looked this up to respond to an article I was responding to last weekend. When you work people over at the 50-hour level, there's a threshold, approximately 50 hours. When you start to work people harder after that, you're actually working them less because they're exhausted. And their brain, it's just like asking someone to run up a hill. And let's say they normally can run, an hour up a hill. Let's just throw that, or 30, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. And then suddenly you're asking them to run up the hill 2 hours without a break. They can't do it. Their body can't do it. It's the same thing when you overwork people. They physically cannot do it without crashing. People need breaks. It's just the same thing as the fact that we need sleep. It's very similar to that physiology.
And as long as we're allowing people to have breaks, to have the social interaction, the diversions, we can probably expect that they'll maintain an acceptable work output.
Yes, and I want to bring up a really important point that has come up a lot since people started working from home, and the issue of trust. If a person can get an 8-hour day's work done in 6 hours, do they have to work 8 hours? And if that's, say, if another person takes them 10 hours to do 8 hours of work, is it fair for them to work 8 hours? And so we have to learn to trust people to be able to say, wow, I've worked a full day. I finished this huge report, or if they're a biologist, I finished this huge research project, whatever it is. Wow, my brain is, you know how when you've worked really hard on something and you feel like, wow, I can stop now, and you give your brain a break? That you have to trust people to know what their limits are. And that they're feeling creative and innovative. And again, that you're staying in touch with them and you know what's going on.
Janice, where does trust fit into the stress burnout equation?
Well, it's funny you should mention, it's funny you should ask that. First of all, people need to learn how to trust themselves. And so with a younger, newer person joining the workforce, again, spending time with them and grooming them to understand what their capabilities are and to trust themselves, then you can trust them because you know they're doing their best work and they're trying and they care. You know, the culture has to be such that people really care and love their job to the point where they want to recruit their friends. Those are the people you can trust. And they won't burn out because they'll know it. They'll know themselves well enough to know when they're burning out.
Do you suggest journaling or some form of journaling as a way to take a litmus test of where you are at emotionally and mentally?
Journaling is really, really important. Really important. I think some people suggest you journal every day. Some people suggest you journal when you have a problem. I personally journal when something's going on that's bothering me. And when you're writing, the amygdala, the fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain, the fear center of the brain is dumping. When you put it down and then go back to it and reread it or read it to a friend, the prefrontal cortex, the executive functioning part of the brain, is now analyzing. And sometimes things are hiding beneath the surface from the past. Could be from the way your parent raised you or a teacher treated you, or it could be a situation from a prior job that's kind of hanging underneath. And there are stingers all through your heart and soul, so to speak, that emerge sometimes that get triggered by certain situations that are similar to things from the past. And so when you write, you uncover those and you take the stinger out and you take the power away from that hidden secret that's lying beneath the surface. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, and when you describe a stinger from the past, I think of the old psychiatrist type thing. So tell me about your problems. And oh, I see this is a relationship you had with your mother. It's all her fault. And that's why you are the way you are today. And and the point being that everything we feel and do now has some relation to the sum of our past experiences, I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, it's just like a broken bone. When you x-ray a leg that has had a broken bone, they can see that bone broke and healed. It's always with you. Every single experience we have, whether you've been to therapy or not, is still with us. It's in our body and it's in our psyche. And it's important to stay in touch with yourself. And like you brought up a moment ago, George, about journaling, the more you know yourself, the more you can recognize when something's bothering you, and so that you don't act erratically at work. If you've ever seen somebody react to something that wasn't a big deal, but they have this huge overreaction, that's a clue that they're hanging on to something from the past, or they learned that behavior because it was role modeled throughout their youth.
You mentioned the healing of a broken bone. A person who has experienced burnout, do they develop scar tissue so that they're now stronger?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And because they've healed from it, they know how to heal from it. And they know how to recognize when it's coming so they can attack it sooner.
Janice, people who might want to find out more about your speaking, your workshops, the place to do that is at your website. And tell us where that is.
At janicelitvin.com. I assume in the show notes, you'll include that web address.
It's in the notes below. Yes, the link is below. For more about what Janice does and how she can help your team feel healthy and happy at work and be more importantly, be supportive of each other, then visit her website to learn more. Janice, before we wrap up, if you could talk to a new team leader, someone who's just taken over leadership role in a team, and you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice of how to monitor and prevent burnout among their team, what might be that one, two, or three pieces of advice?
The number one thing I would say to them is get some training in emotional intelligence if you're not intuitively emotionally intelligent. Some people are, some people aren't. But I just had a conversation recently with a group of young leaders. It's funny you should ask that question, George. And they were saying things like, I don't know if I'm delegating too much or not delegating enough. I don't know if I'm being too emotionally intelligent or not emotionally intelligent enough. As you begin to grow and develop time and talent and a strong team, you'll begin to feel it out. But the first thing to do is to get trained in emotional intelligence. And you might need a coach. You might need an EQ coach or an executive coach. And that's one of their strengths. It's kind of like a therapist, except coaches go forwards. They don't go backwards in time.
Positive, powerful advice. My guest today is Janice Litvin, reminding you that first you get to know your people by spending time with them, and then you know when they aren't being themselves.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.